Everybody, this is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast Women Who Stutter Our Stories, which can be found on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com, and it's also freely available as a download wherever you get your podcasts. Today, as always, I have the real pleasure and privilege to have another amazing woman share parts of her story. So I'd like to say hello to Eileen. Hey, how are you today?
Hi, Pam. I'm good. Thank you so much for this invitation. I'm excited to be here.
I am too. So to kick us off and get us started, could you formally introduce yourself, who you are, where you're from, what keeps you busy?
Sure. So my name is Eileen Chu. I'm an assistant professor at Georgia State University. I received my PhD in speech and hearing science from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign and completed my postdoc at the University of Michigan. What keeps me busy? Well, I eat, sleep, drink, think about stuttering all the time. I teach the neuroscience class and the fluency class, and I do research on stuttering. So it's what I think about. Stuttering keeps me busy all the time, and I love it.
Did you always know from a younger age that this was something that you wanted to do?
You know, that's a great question, and the answer is no. So I actually have my undergraduate degree in marine biology.
Oh,
yes,
wow.
I know. Yes. And I worked, you know, I've done work on marine conservation. I've worked with shrimp and fish. I've worked with copepods, you know, and I did that for a long time. And I taught high school biology as well. And and my dad also stutters. And I remember as my dad aged and I was getting older, you know, and I was thinking, oh, I wonder if his stuttering is getting more severe. And I remember, you know, trying to look things up to find out more. And, you know, I remember reading, there is no cure for stuttering. I'm like, how can this be? I'm going to go back to grad school. I'm going to find the cure, of course, right? At that point, I'm like, this is what I'm going to do. And yeah, so this is how I came to be. And, you know, and I then did my master's at the University of Canterbury. And this is in Christchurch, New Zealand. Where my research focused on stuttering. And so so it's kind of a roundabout long path to where I'm at now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness. That's wonderful, especially since speech and language therapy wasn't on the radar originally. That's just funny, from marine biology to communication. So you said your dad stutters too. So was stuttering talked about when you were young and in the family?
Yeah. So, you know, stuttering wasn't talked about at all. Like, my dad and I have never had a conversation about stuttering. Now we have a conversation about the research that I do, but we've never had a conversation about stuttering. And I've never had a conversation about stuttering with my mom. You know, my mom does not stutter. And, you know, and I remember thinking, you know, as I was older and I went back to grad school, right? And I'm thinking, why have we never had a conversation about stuttering? And, you know, and I remember growing up that my parents thought that if we put our mind to things, we can do anything that we wanted. And my dad taught for 30 years and he stutters. And I think for me, the fact that he stutters and he teaches, you know, it never occurred to me that this was something I couldn't do. And so I think the fact that we didn't talk about it wasn't that we were hiding, but it was just the fact that it wasn't important enough to talk about. Because I think my parents believed that if anything was going to hold us back, my sisters and I, you know, if anything was going to hold us back, and for me, you know, if anything was going to hold us back, for me, it wasn't stuttering. Like if anything was going to hold us back, it was us. Maybe we weren't working hard enough, or it was something else. So stuttering wasn't something that I could use as an excuse. Stuttering wasn't something that I thought was going to hold me back. Like it never occurred to me that stuttering was going to stop me from doing something.
Does your dad stutter overtly?
Yes, he does. He stutters overtly. So when my dad and I talk, you know, you can hear us both stuttering.
That's kind of cool. That's great. Very, very open, very transparent. So your educational journey took you from BA to master's to PhD. What was it like being a student and stuttering? What was the reaction of peers and professors?
Yeah, so that's another excellent question. I would say as an undergraduate, you know, stuttering, I never even thought about it. Like I honestly never thought about it. Like I was just excited to be out there on the boat, swimming in the ocean, doing a plankton tow. I was excited to be working with fish. Sometimes we would see dolphins and sharks, you know, excited. Like it never occurred to me. And then for my master's, you know, that's when I started thinking more about stuttering. And I do remember we had a lab meeting once and Ray Kent happened to be there. And then Ray Kent asked me, you know, when you read about research, right, do you think that what we talk about and the research that is, does it encapsulate who you are and what you do as a person who stutters? And that got me thinking, you know, like, does it really, like the research that I read about, right? Does it reflect who I am? And then for my PhD, you know, I remember being really stressed. Like you're in grad school, you're really stressed. And I do remember at the point thinking, wow, I am stuttering a lot more than I've ever been. Because I remember when I wanted to go back to grad school and told my friends I was going to go look at stuttering. They were like, why? And I'm like, because I stutter, don't you guys know? And they were like, oh, right. And it was funny that at the point I thought, I am stuttering so much. And I remember teaching the fluency class as a grad student. And I remember the first time I taught the class, I was so tired by the end of it because I was stuttering so much. And I thought, can I do this? Like I've never up to that point thought, can I do this? I remember, can I do this? It's so, you know, emotionally draining for me to be standing there and stuttering. And then I remember also that the students came up to me and they thought it was so great. And my course evaluations were great. And I thought, oh, I can do this. I am sharing with them something, you know, if they're SLPs or working with people who stutter, this is what they should know. So yeah, so I would say, yeah, I mean, I didn't think about it, then I thought about it, and then now I'm at a point where I think about it all the time, but it's okay, in a good way.
Did any students in your communication disorders class stutter themselves?
Yeah, so I have had, you know, I would say every year there's at least one or two students who will come up to me, and they will say, I stutter, you know, I'm not really sure, what do I do? And, you know, and I think, I don't know if I give them any advice on what to do because they've been, I mean, most of these students have had therapy in the past, but I think what they really wanted to know, what they want to hear is that it's okay that you stutter, right? And just knowing that there's someone else who stutters that I understand, and I think that is what helps. So having a conversation with them, I think that puts them at ease, knowing that you can be successful. So it's not so much they were coming to me thinking, you know, what kind of technique should I use? But it's just a knowing, let's chat about how successful you can be. And I think that, I would say that that's some of the more meaningful things that I get from the class, that students come up to me and it means a lot that they trust me and they want to share their stories with me.
Yeah. So those one or two students, are they male or female?
So I would say mostly they've been female.
Ah. Right? Okay.
Yeah. So mostly they've been female. They come up to me, you know, and they share the experiences that they have, they share the struggles that they have. And I think knowing that I understand, I am a woman as well, I'm female, I understand where we're at and the struggles that we face. Yeah, so most of them have been female. And I'm so glad that I am a resource for them. It gives so much meaning to my work.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You're in such a good position to be able to authentically influence people about stuttering, and, you know, not just talking about it, but, you know, doing it, you know. And I've heard of so many, you know, professors, you know, and you know, across the board teaching fluency classes who have no lived experience with stuttering, and it's hard to convey that to your students. So I think that's just one wonderful that your students get that lived experience as you're teaching, like every course or every unit, you know?
Absolutely. And Pam, I would say the same thing about the work that you do, right? This podcast, right? It's reaching women in different countries where we maybe would not have, right? For me, I see students in my class. If you pass my class, you know, like if you go through the course, you'll know that I'm there. But you are able to reach out to millions of women out there who stutter, and some who may live in places where maybe they think they're the only person. So I would say your work, what you do, is absolutely impactful, it's purposeful, and it's meaningful.
Oh, thank you so much. I don't think that I'm actually reaching millions of people, women, you know, but you can.
To be millions.
You can help with that by, you know, talking about it, using it as a reference, you know, just sharing the link with people. And, you know, to be honest, I've always been tickled with the title, www.stutterrockstar.com. I was just always, you know, that was my Twitter handle way back when. And when I started the blog, I'm like, I'm going to purchase that URL and make that, you know, use that, you know, so.
I love it. And that's who you are, Stutter Rockstar, reaching millions of people. This is your stage. It's wonderful.
Yeah. So, you know, we're talking about women who stutter, our stories. And you mentioned a few minutes ago that you think that there's a difference in stuttering between men and women. Can you elaborate a bit more on that? I mean, you know, what tells you that women who stutter are in the minority?
Absolutely, right? So, you know, this is another great point and a great question as well, right? So, I mean, the stats that we typically use for it's usually 4-1. Right. So we're the minority, like you say, we're the minority within the minority. And we know that women have very different lived experiences than men. And the fact that we as women, we have this compounded experience of stuttering. So I'm not saying that our experiences don't overlap with men who stutter, but I'm saying that there are experiences that are unique to us. And I think a lot of times, you know, those experiences are not known. Those experiences maybe are not shared and maybe overlooked sometimes. And I do think that as women who stutter, I think that we, you know, that our experiences are valid and I think they should be heard.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think women, typically women who stutter are often the ones that are more covert, you know, that, you know, try to hide stuttering more, feel that they have to, You know, particularly in, you know, social context, but particularly the workplace. Do you find that true? I mean, have you experienced that or researched that at all?
So that's something that I have not found. I think as the person who stutters at work, you know, I mean, when I interview for the job, people know that I stutter. So I think, right? And then, you know, and even if they're not within, you know, CSD, right? Even if they're not within the field, sometimes people will ask me, well, why do you do the work you do? And I'll say, well, I stutter, right? So I think for me, it's easier to disclose. And, you know, but I agree with you. I think a lot of times that, you know, women feel like they have to hide the fact that they stutter. But I think that says more about society. Right? And how society views who we are and having to hide this. I mean, we already face more discrimination at work compared to men. And, you know, and I could see women not wanting to disclose because this could be, you know, one more ding against them, right? So I, you know, and I think that what really needs to change is society needs to embrace who we are, the fact that we are women and we stutter. And when that burden is lifted, I think more women will feel, you know, more comfortable coming out to say, hey, I stutter, this is who I am. I expect you at work to accommodate who I am. I expect to get support, you know, but until society changes and society's views of women change and society of, you know, people who stutter change and then compounded both of them for us, you know, I think women are more likely to feel uncomfortable sharing. Mm-hmm. That needs to change.
Yeah. Do you have an idea of how society in general can become more understanding and accepting of stuttering and help us, you know, bust the silence?
Another great question. So this is why I have, you know, I've started a line of research with one of my best friends, Dr. Stephanie Seitz, who's in the Department of Management, and she's also a lawyer as well. So I've started this line of research with her, and we're planning to look at what are the experiences of people who stutter in the workplace and how can we ask for organizational change, right? So we want to collect stories from people who stutter and use the knowledge that we gather to ask for organizational change, to ask for organizational support for people who stutter. So, I mean, you know, a lot of these studies out there that have looked at people who stutter in the workplace, the perspective has mainly been on the experiences of the person who stutters, right? And what that burden is on us. But I think it's time that we share that burden. And what that means is that we need to pass on some of this to the organizations that we work with. We need to hold them accountable for the changes that we expect to happen. We need to hold them responsible to make changes to accommodate who we are. So we are collecting data now. So I hope to be able to tell you maybe in a year or two, you know, when this study is done, what are some of the specific ways that organizations can help support and accommodate people who stutter, and including women who stutter, who may have very different experiences at work compared to men.
Yeah. Yes. And do you hope to publish your research?
Absolutely. That is the aim. So the aim is to not just publish within, you know, not just within Fluency, right? Because then it's a very small group. But the reason why, you know, I am also collaborating with Dr. Stephanie Seitz is because she brings in a very different organizational uh, per, per, perspective that I don't have. And we're hoping that we are, that this study can be used, that organizations will use this in order to make changes to accommodate people who stutter.
Mm. Wow. You're just doing so much to truly walk the walk. You know, you're not just talking about the importance of, you know, opening up stuttering in the workplace. You're, you know, contributing some very tangible ways to do that. And not very many people have that opportunity to do that. So I'm like so much looking forward to the day when you do pass that information along, because I'd like to share it on my blog and, you know, help you to get the word out.
Absolutely. I mean, this is why I do the work that I do, right? Because at the end of the day, what I hope is that the research that we do in the field is going to help make change, meaningful, purposeful change for people who stutter. This is the aim, right? This is the aim of, I would say, you know, probably, so I'm going to here speak for every research fluency researcher out there, but I'm sure that, right? But I'm sure that this is our aim, that the work that we do, we hope that it's going to make meaningful changes, purposeful changes, positive changes in the lives of people who stutter.
Now you talked about, you know, we're talking generally about the workplace. I believe that in workplace DEI programs, diversity, equity, and inclusion, that stuttering needs to be, you know, added or included, or, you know, just simply known, so that people who stutter in the workplace know that, you know, they're part of that, and that the workplaces are, you know, supportive of that. But I mean, I very rarely see, you know, companies that have their DEI programs, and they have, you know, different employee resource groups. You very rarely see stuttering touched upon. Why do you think that is?
I'm so glad, Pam, that you brought that up. And I think it's absolutely true. I think when people think about DEI, you know, they're thinking about race, they're thinking about gender, ethnicity, right? And a lot of times they don't think about stuttering.
Right.
And I you're right. I think it has to change. You know, I think for maybe the reason why it's that people don't even think about, you know, stuttering, that it should be included in every DEI conversation, is that it's something that isn't tangible when we don't speak. You don't see it, right? It's not like race, it's not like color, it's not like gender, right? So if you don't see it, I think if you don't see it, it's easier to say, well, maybe it's not there. Let's deal with the things that we do see. But I also think, you know, that maybe our voices aren't as loud as it should be. Mm-hmm. I'm actually right now on the DEI college level DEI committee at work, and we discuss a lot of things, you know, but I have to confess to you, I actually haven't thought about discussing fluency. You know, because we talk about many things, right? We're talking about how to support students of color, talking about diversity. But even me as a person who stutters, when I'm there, I am in that mode. I'm talking about, you know, let's get this done, because it's right there. It's in front of it. It's loud. It's clear, right? But you're right. I think, well, you know what? I'm so glad that you brought this up, because up next time when I meet, I'm going to bring this up, because I think it is so, it's so important, but it's so easy to not talk about it when you don't see it, right? And when people who stutter don't talk, people can just ignore it and say it's not there.
Right. It's so hard, right, to deal with like hidden disabilities, because obviously not only are they hidden, but, you know, people who, you know, who stutter or, you know, have anxiety or depression, they're reluctant to be the one to bring it up, you know, and they feel like, well, because there's not an employee resource group that I could fit into, I don't want to cause any trouble.
Yes. And I also wonder the reason why you don't bring it up, because you think it could negatively impact you, right? Like if you say, well, the fact that I stutter, I need accommodation for this, then you wonder if your employer is going to go, well, okay, maybe we can't, so we're going to look for someone else, right? So I think that goes back to the previous conversation that we've had about, you know, when we feel safe, I think it's when we can say we are going to disclose the fact that we stutter. If we know that there's not going to be any discrimination against us. But I think at this point, I don't know if people who stutter, I don't think we are sure that is the case, right? We cannot be sure that our employers are not going to discriminate against us because of the fact that we stutter. And I wonder if that's another reason why people usually don't disclose.
Right. And that's a really good point. Like we're just assuming what employers are going to think. You know, we assume that they're going to be judgmental and just, you know, push us under the carpet. And we can't have those preconceived, you know, false assumptions, because then nothing works, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you also mentioned workplace accommodations. What are accommodations for people who stutter, or what could they be?
Well, that's a good question. And I think for me, right, as a person who is in the CSD field at work, my accommodations, I would expect that, you know, if I'm going to give a talk, if I'm going to speak, I maybe would ask for a little more time, you know, and for my students in class, if they stutter and they come up to me and they say, you know, I'm having a hard time, maybe I can't do this presentation in class, I would say, what are the things that you need, right? If it means that you record yourself instead of doing face-to-face, that could work. Or if it could mean that, you know, maybe we could do some of it face-to-face, some of it, you know, online, that could work. So, yeah, so I think the accommodations that we ask for is something that would fit our needs. And I think as people who stutter, depending on the jobs that we do, some of those needs may be very different. But under ADA, your employers are supposed, and they're mandated, they're legally supposed to give you reasonable accommodations if you need them.
Right, right. Wow. Eileen, we need to wind down. And I don't really want to, because I feel like we could talk forever about this. I feel like we're kind of kindred spirits in that, you know, our stories, women's stories, need to be out there so much more than they are. But you're playing a part in making sure that happens. You know, the work that you're doing simply because you're a guest today, and we're really talking about it from two different perspectives. I'm not in university, I'm not a researcher, but these two themes are in common, right?
Like absolutely
research and, you know, something as simple as a podcast, giving people that space to talk about it.
Absolutely. Because at the end of the day, our goals are the same, right? And the goal is to make sure that people who stutter are heard, that we are giving a voice for people who stutter, and that our needs are met at work and outside of work, right? And that stuttering shouldn't be something that people can use to discriminate against us.
Exactly. And what would you say, like, final question, what would you say is the lesson that you've learned from this journey with stuttering? Like, what is the most, I don't want to use the word profound, but I will, like, what is the most profound lesson that you've experienced along the way?
So this is one that I've shared in the past. I would say the most profound and is that we as people who stutter need to hold those who don't stutter to a higher standard. And I mean higher standard as in we should expect more of our conversation partners. We should expect more of our workplace. We should expect more people who don't stutter, meaning that the burden of fluency isn't always on us. And you know, and there shouldn't be no burden of fluency at all. We should expect that our conversation partners wait for us. We should expect them to, you know, to be part of the conversation and share this burden and this interaction of conversation. And I think too often, people who stutter, I think too often what we do is all the burdens is placed on us. And I think we ask too little of the world. So I would say it's time, let's ask more and let's expect more.
Yeah, wow. That's such a perfect way to wind down. Eileen, thank you so much for being a guest today. And you know, sharing so openly as you have. I'm so glad I asked you to be on the show.
Pam, it has been a pleasure. I've enjoyed our conversation, and I'm so glad that you are doing this meaningful, purposeful work. You know, I'm so glad. So thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Oh, you're most welcome. And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.